into English. Okay, good morning, everyone. Today we're beginning Sefer Vayikra, the new book, Sefer Vayikra. Usually, we don't get to do very much of Vayikra because Pesach takes it all up and the space of the time of the year. But I have 1 week that I figure we should at least get one, some concepts in of what the book of Vayikra is all about. Just a drop of a drop, because there's so much to talk about. And let's start with the very beginning. The very first word is Vayikra. In the first source, I give it to you in English, and then at the end, I give it to you in Hebrew. So we'll go backwards. The reason I have to do that is because it works better with my computer to put the English first and then the Hebrew. Just, I'm not so tech-savvy to put the Hebrew first. I think it just doesn't work for me. So the Hebrew says, Vayikra el Moshe, and he called to Moshe. Vayidaber Hashem elav me'omer, and Hashem spoke to him in the tent of meeting, le'mor, le'mor, and the letter's missing. Daber el b'nei Yisrael, speak to the Jewish people, v'mar talem, and say to them, Odom ki yakriv mikem korban, A man, if a man from amongst you shall bring a korban, that's what I brought in the Hebrew, from cattle or from the flock, you shall bring your sacrifice. Okay. So the part I want to focus on is the first word, Vayikra, and the next, the end of over there, Adam ki yakriv mikem korban. Okay. So we see that we have a person, Adam ki akriv mikem korban. So what does that mean? A person who is bringing a korban to Hashem. Now we know the word korban comes from the word karov, to get close. So this person is bringing an offering to get close to Hashem. So we're starting with this idea that we're trying to get close to Hashem. A person gets an arousal to want to get close to Hashem. However, before we get to the person having arousal to get close to Hashem, we have to look at that word Vayikra and see what the word Vayikra is really meaning over here. So when you have the word Vayikra, Vayikra from a kriya. So you see in the second source, Rashi says, kriya is an expression of affection, of love. Because when a person calls somebody, what is he really saying? When you're calling somebody, what are you saying?
Who are you?
No.
Who are you?
You tell the person, come closer. Chaim Yankel, come here. Come closer to me.
Because I want to say something.
In other words, I want to tell you something, and I want you to be close to me. A korei is always a call to bring someone close to you. Okay? So Vayikra isn't the content, because you see the pasuk says Vayikra el Moshe, then Vayidaber. Then he spoke to him. But before he spoke to him, he first called to him to come close to him. Okay? That means, you know, I want, if you want a person, that, you know, people you hate, you don't want them being close to you. You want them far away from you. People you like, you want them close to you. If I don't like you, I'll call for you from a great distance, because I don't want to see you too near me. I'll give the message far away. But that's why I'll send you an email instead of call you up. I don't think people mean that, but that's just what happens, you know. Now, when you send an email, like if you send a thank you to somebody, you could send an email, you could send a letter, and you could say it in person. Obviously, the closer you make it, the more a person feels beloved. If you go over and say, you know, I really want to thank you. You know, let's say a person drives to your house and says, I want to personally thank you for what you did for me. Right? Now that you feel that the person likes you, you know? If you just send an email, thanks for the present. Okay. They acknowledged it, but lacking that closeness, right? Yeah, okay, well, there's certain things that are not meant to be closeness. It just could be business. Can you give me the quote on a on a dozen widgets, so I don't have to call you, and it's hard to get a hold of people, and you're not going to go all the way to his office just to get a quote. Certain things that are technical things, yes, email has a lot of value. First ask me, halachic shaila, is this kosher or not? Until they get a hold of me on the phone, could take a long time. You send me the email, and I just say yes or no, finish. Those aren't aspects where we're expecting to be close. But let's say a woman and a man are going out for a while, and they're getting very serious, and then one of them wants to break off the relationship. You know, you just don't send an email. Maybe you do, because you want to show that you're not close to him. I don't think a man should propose to his wife via email, his girlfriend via email. Right? So the idea of calling somebody means I want you to be close to me. I want to be close to you. So the Chalban notes, and he says, the fact that the Parsha starts first with Vayikra el Moshe, Hashem is calling Moshe first. So the Chalban in Source 3 says, the calling of Hashem to Moshe in its depth is a deep inner calling to all of the Jewish people to come and get close to Hashem. Because Moshe is a representative of the Jewish people. Whatever Hashem says to Moshe, he's saying to the Jewish people. Because the only reason he tells anything to Moshe is because he wants him to talk to the Jewish people. So Hashem is saying, Moshe, come close. And I want you to tell everybody else that I want you all to come close to me. That was the whole reason I took you out of Egypt. And then the Chalban adds, he says, the fact that Hashem wants us to be close to him, that penetrates into our souls. And he says, the root of every yearning and desire to get close to Hashem is the essential yearning of Hashem to us. The fact, and you think about it, you know, you usually, people that you want to be close to, quite often are people who you feel want to be close to you. If you feel this person isn't interested in you, so you don't really have much interest in it, right? Really. You know, let's say a guy wants to ask this girl out for a date. He's trying to get it, but she never is interested in him. Whenever he walks by, she walks the other way, right? Okay, I see you're giving me the cold shoulder. So, you know, after a while, you give up hope and you don't want to get close to that person. But if you sense a person, that's always the trick in religious shidduchim, not in the secular world. In religious shidduchim, boy goes out with a girl. They only go out to know if they have to get married or not. And part of it, you know, sometimes one person is afraid to say that they like the other person. They're afraid to say because they're not sure if the other person likes them. And sometimes you can have both of them like each other, but they're afraid to say it because they don't know if the other one does. Sometimes it's hard for a person to want to get close to someone if they're not sure the other person, because it's very, very hurtful if you share your feelings. So you want a close person, the other person says, well, I don't really want to. I'm sorry you feel that way, but I don't want to be close to you. So it holds back if you want to get close. If you sense that other person really would like you to get close to them, then you will get close to them. That's what Shlomelch said. Just like when the person faces the water, your face is in the water. The face you see is the face you're giving off. So the same thing over here. And that's what he ends in Source. He says, the source of the yearning to Hashem is the light of Hashem that illuminates inside our hearts. In other words, he's saying the whole reason that we would have any desire to want to get close to Hashem really comes from the fact that inside we sense that Hashem wants to get close to us. And if we sense that Hashem wants to get close to us, then we will respond that we want to get close to Hashem. So, obviously, people who mistakenly think that Hashem hates them is not going to want to get close to Hashem. Right? If a person will dig deep into their souls, they'll feel that Hashem, they'll sense that Hashem really loves them and wants to get close to them. And therefore, they will want to get close to Hashem. And that's the paradigm. And this is the first pasuk. This is the paradigm for the whole book of Vayikra. It's, you know, we've finished Bereishis, we finished Shmos, we have a people, we have everything's in place. Everything from a technical point of view is in place. We have a Torah now, we have freedom, we have the Mishkan, we're able to do our Vodas Hashem. Everything from a technical point of view is ready to go in Yiddishkeit. So now, what's the very first word to start it off? So you have to realize that the fact that now we're going to really learn what it means to be a Jew. Because that's what Vayikra is all about, service to God. After all, why did Hashem take us out of Egypt? Why did Hashem create us? To serve Him. Right? That's the technical part. That's the physical part. But the real, the theme is Vayikra. Hashem is calling us. He's saying, I want you to get close to me. And the fact that I want you to get close to me, I hope will well up feelings of you wanting to get close to me as well. And that's what Yiddishkeit's all about. That's what the Vayikra. So there's a nice little vignette that the Chabad brings down with Reb Chaim Vital and his Rebbe, the Arizal. One day, Reb Chaim Vital relates, he writes in his Sefer, he says, you don't have it here, you're only going to have the end of it. But I'm setting it up. We're going to come to source 4 in a minute, but we're not yet there yet. He says, Reb Chaim Vital said, one day, I cried very much, and I prayed a lot to Hashem, and I fasted, and I wanted to know why Hashem was holding back from me certain ways of tshuva. In other words, I want to get close to Hashem. I want to get close to Hashem, and he sees he's not able to get as close as he wants to. He seems that Hashem is holding it back from him, holding back from him this ability to tshuva, and he's, so to speak, complaining, so to speak, that, you know, how come you're not letting me get closer to you? How come you're not giving me feelings, ways of tshuva? So, Reb Chaim Vital then went to his Rebbe, and the Arizal, right away, the Arizal just had a look at your face, and he knew what was going on. So the Arizal just looks at the face of Reb Chaim Vital, he knew the whole story, what was going on. And the Arizal said to me, you should know, my student, that at that moment that you complained to Hashem, in the heavenly court, they wanted to kill you on the spot, to punish you on the spot, because you said very strong words against Hashem. But there was a defense attorney up in the heavens and said, listen, you only were doing it because you wanted to do your Avodas Hashem. You're only complaining that you wanted to do more Avodas Hashem. So you got off the hook. You had good intentions, but your behavior wasn't acceptable for someone on that level. And he said, you have to be careful not to talk that way. Be careful not to complain to Hashem in these areas. Now look in source 4, where now we have the remainder part of what the Arizal's message was. I'll say it a little bit in Hebrew, and then we'll see the English.
Thank you.
But it's not there. You'll have to hear it, Esther. Ki yoter mima sha'egel rotza linek, para rotza lahanik. In other words, more than the calf wants to nurse from the mother, the mother wants to give the calf to drink. But there are certain times for everything, like it says in Koheles, there's L'chol Zman Ve'es, Tachas HaShemayim. There's a time for everything. You know, as much as, you know, it's interesting, you know, when you have a grandchild living in the house, there could be a tendency of a grandparent to want to indulge the grandchild in treats and sweets and things like that, right? So presently, my daughter and son-in-law, they're very health conscious. They're extremely health conscious, right? And their son, Chaya, very health conscious. So they don't want to have any candies. Only on Purim, when all the grandchildren were in the house, everyone was getting candies. So you have to give him a piece of candy. He's gonna, you know. They don't want to get used to it. You know, you want something, a treat? You get a fruit, a sweet fruit. So I think that's very nice, you know. But anyway, but sometimes, you know, so my wife twice got caught. Once by her son-in-law and once by her daughter. She wanted to give him a cookie. He said, can I have a cookie? She wants to give him a cookie. And boom. So my daughter took it away. Says, Ima, you know we don't give them cookies. Right? Now, as much as the mother wants to give the kid, as much as the kid wants the cookie, the mother really wants to give the kid, but it's not always the time to give the cookie. Wait for Shabbos, okay? On Shabbos, okay, you'll have to get a little something sweeter. The whole week they don't give them cookies, they don't cake, nothing. Just fruits, vegetables, meat, very healthy food. right? I don't know how long they're going to be able to maintain that when he goes to school. But anyways, on Shabbos, the treat is he gets a cookie. We're not even talking about candy, right? So there's a time to give, right? So he's saying, so how could I have, God forbid, said that Hashem is holding back from me the ways of tshuva? And now here's the last point. He says the opposite. Who brought in your heart the desire to want to do tshuva if it wasn't because Hashem, who wants to be close to you? In other words, the fact that you wanted to be close to Hashem, where do you think that came from? Hashem put it in you. Okay, the fact he didn't give you the methods to get to do tshuva, for whatever reason, it wasn't a good time to get it. But that's the point that the Arizal was telling the student Reb Chaim Vital. That any desire for us to come close to Hashem has been preceded way from the beginning of Hashem's desire to be close to us. And that's all incorporated in this first pasuk. This first pasuk is, first, Vayikra El Moshe. Hashem is calling Moshe to get close to us, as he's going to discuss the entire discussion of the Korbanot. And that's because I want you to get close to me. And that, in turn, if a Jew is sensitive to his own soul, he'll realize that Hashem wants you, and that will want you to get close to Hashem. So that's point number one, is a general idea. Okay. So now, how's the means of getting close? It's by bringing a korban. Okay, now, although a korban, nowadays we don't bring korbanos, we still learn about it every year. Every year, the next three parshas talk extensively about korbanos. So we have to learn it, even though we don't have it. Why? Because the source of whatever benefits we get from a mitzvah is not from doing the mitzvah alone, but it's from the Torah that obligates us to do it. So let's look into this world of korbanos and see exactly what's going on over here. A little drop of what's going on. And then we'll see how it applies in a practical way. We always have to end it off in a very practical way. And we'll see how practical it fits in as well here. And there's really two main ideas we're going to discuss. And the first idea the Chalban explains, he says, obviously the holiest place in the entire universe is the Beis HaMikdash. And that's the root of all the Shekhinah, the divine presence that comes into the world. It starts by the Beis HaMikdash. So obviously any work that we do in the Beis HaMikdash must be central importance for the Jewish people if that's where we're doing it. Like Hashem is telling us to do it somewhere, you know, in Haifa. He said, no, in the place that the holiest place in the world is where we do this activity, it must be an extremely important activity. And the primary activity in the Beis HaMikdash was bringing offerings to God, bringing korbanos. It was a major, major activity. If we the problem is we never saw it. We don't know what we were missing. But you can imagine, constantly from sun up to sundown on a typical day, there are animals being offered non-stop. Animal offerings, with all that it entailed. And, obviously, the most important offerings were the communal offerings, because they were on behalf of the entire Jewish people. And the most important, the communal offerings, was the Korban Tavi, the daily offerings, where once in the morning and once in the late afternoon, a daily offering was brought. And the question is, what was the great value and benefit of these offerings? What did they accomplish? So we'll start for some words of the Zohar, and then we'll explain what the Zohar means. So I gave you just a little bit of it in source number 5. I'll just add, I'm going to read it from the original source, so it's going to have a little bit more than what you have in there. One of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's students, Rabbi Chizkia, he asked him the following question. He says, we call this offering a korban. And he says, really, it should be called not korban, it should be called kiruv or krivut. Why is it called korban? It says that a person, adam ki yakriv mikem korban. So why is it called a korban? And I'm just saying the words now. You won't understand this. We'll explain in a minute. And he says, well, because a korban is bringing close together the holy crowns, which he's hinting to, the spheros, the the things that Hashem does in the universe. That he bring, but that bringing the korban brings the spheros together into one unit until they become one complete unit, and that repairs Hashem's holy name properly. That's, I believe, all you have over there. And it's called a korban l'Hashem. It's a korban to bring those holy crowns of Hashem closer together to complete the name of Hashem properly. And then, and at the end, I believe I have it written there. He ends it off there. Do I have it there? Yeah. And the very end is, so that what? So that mercy will pour down into all the worlds below. Hashem is crowned with all these crowns to give benefit to everybody else. And the student was very happy to hear this. Okay, what is the Zohar talking about? So the Zohar is the question. Let's understand what was the question and what was the answer. Okay, so when we say, when we say that a person wants to get close to someone, so if I want to get close to you, then I want to have an act of kiruv, of closeness, krivut. I want to be close to him. So that's questions. If the point of the korban was for the person to get close to Hashem, then it shouldn't have been called a korban. It should be called a kiruv, a krivut, not a korban. Because in perfect biblical Hebrew, a korban really relates more to when a person brings two things together. When a person brings two things together, then we say it's a korban. Let's say le karvan zelaze. Right. So really, the word korban is not me bringing myself to somebody close, but really bringing two things close together. And that's the question: if we're talking, I'm bringing a korban to get close to Hashem, it should not be called a korban. It should be called a kiruv or a krivut. That's a closeness between one, me and you. But korban means I'm trying to put two things close together outside of myself. So why is it called a korban? So what he says, and this is going to need a bit of explanation, he says you are bringing two distinct things together. And what are those two things? Well, more than two. You're bringing many things together. And this is what the spheros, the emanations of God's activity in the world. We'll explain what this all means. But what's happening is that with our, and this is the miracle of the mitzvah of a korban. When a person takes an animal offering, we'll explain how this happens. When a person takes an animal offering down here in the very physical way, because Hashem made it a mitzvah, and that means Hashem has now incorporated that into the realities of the world. What happens is it makes incredible repairs in the heavenly realms. And for the repairs to be as they should be, you have to bring the different forces that are in the higher world together. You have to bring them close together. And when they are brought close together, that is able to bring blessing into the world. So let me just oversimplify this. Do a very oversimplification of a basic Kabbalistic idea. And we're no way near understanding it at all. But just to have an idea, you should know that this is going on. So don't realize it's not, So when we want to have blessings in our lives. You want to have the rain come down at the right time. The crop should grow properly. All things in this world should be going well. Well, nothing starts from this world. Everything starts from the world above. And what Hashem would very much love to do is to give all kinds of good things to this world. But the methodology in which Hashem did it is such that he created a system, we'll call it, as a metaphor, a sophisticated plumbing system. No difference than you have in your house, right? You want to have some water, you turn the tap and you get water. Really, now. You think the water just came out of the tap? No. Where was the water before it came to the pipe? It was in your water tank in your house. Okay, it's in your water tank. So the water tank produced the water? No, the water tank didn't produce the water. There's a pipe going into your house. And where's that pipe coming from? Well, it's coming from another pipe and another pipe and a bigger pipe on the street. There's big, thick pipes in the street. And those pipes, you know, attach to bigger pipes somewhere else. And they all attach to a central reservoir of a water purification plant. And that water purification plant is connected somewhere to Lake
Erie,
Ontario, or Lake Erie, or some other water system that exists that really is exists because it keeps raining. That's really what's happening. Now, you're interested in only one thing. I want to turn the tap, and I want to get my water. Now, what happened in the month of February? A lot of people were turning on the water taps. They weren't getting any water. What happened? The pipes somewhere in the streets or wherever got frozen. And once they got frozen, they burst. And once they burst, they didn't work, right? Or sometimes over time, the connections between the pipes can get loose and they're not connected. I had in my kitchen a couple months ago, terrible leak under the sink. Well, really, how do you know that it's leaking in the sink? Because it's leaking in the basement. You see a leak in a basement, you go up and see there's a leak in the sink. The guy says, look, you see these two pipes? They're just not connected well anymore. Over time, it wears away the connection. It's not there. Now, when the connection's not there, the water doesn't go through. Okay, so we all understand that on that level. So the same thing with this world. Hashem is at the very top. And Hashem has an incredibly sufficient, because he's running a whole world here. And not just this world. He's running many worlds. Many worlds. There's metaphysical worlds. We just live in the bottom world. Hashem has the most intricate plumbing system of all, in which you want to have all the different pipes aligned with each other. And as long as they're aligned with each other, then the blessings. Now, Hashem is one, but the manifestation, what he does, there's 10 spheros, there's 10 different manifestations of things that he does that makes the world a nice place to live in. And, you know, chesed, gvura, all these things, you know, they got to be really connected in a real good way. If you're missing any of those parts, it's not going to come in a good way. For example, chesed means just an abundance of giving. An abundance. Like crazy. That's good. But what if it's not connected to the pipe of gvura? Gvura means control. Control says, well, we got an abundance, but we got to filter it in a way that only so much comes down. And then at the right time. So what if the chesed and gvura pipes are not connected? Whew, that's what's called a cyclone. And killing, destroying 80% of a little island yesterday. Right? Cyclones just don't come because they come. Cyclone. C-Y-C-L-O-N-E. Cyclone. I never heard of that island. It's somewhere in the Pacific. Somewhere. You know, it just destroyed 80% of the population, of the buildings, whatever. Killed a lot of people. No, it's too much. You know, the pipes weren't working well. Yeah. One of the pipes burst. We like, you know, when the pipes are working really well, it always rains on Friday night when everybody's asleep. A nice, slow rain. Everything gets soaked real well. And then the morning time, everything's fine. You know, if it rains on a Tuesday night when everybody's asleep, that's amazing. And that means all the pipes are really working well. Right? So that is what happens. Now, Hashem, in his infinite wisdom, said the following. He says, frankly, from Hashem, from his point, he's at the very top of the system. He doesn't need nobody, he doesn't need no nothing, he doesn't have to give to anybody, he doesn't need anything. But God says, listen, I've created a world, and I've created people, and I want people to feel really important. I want to feel like they're really accomplishing something. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to prescribe for you a life of Torah mitzvahs. And this life of Torah mitzvahs will accomplish many, many things. And one of the things that it accomplishes is that it keeps the plumbing intact. And the plumbing stays good. And when the plumbing stays good, then the blessings are able to come down into this world. And that's what Hashem wants to do. But if I just give it to you straight without you working for it, you're going to feel ashamed every single day of your life. So therefore, as Hashem doesn't need the plumbing to get fixed, let's say you go to Lake Ontario. Does Lake Ontario care if there's a break in the plumbing somewhere on Bathurst Street? It doesn't bother Lake Ontario.
Right.
But guess what? If you fix the plumbing, Lake Ontario will be able to give you benefits because the plumbing got fixed. Hashem doesn't get anything out of you doing mitzvahs. Hashem doesn't get anything out of the plumbing being fixed. But if the plumbing is fixed, there'll be blessing coming into the world. And obviously, Hashem wants blessing to come into the world, but that's up to us in terms of our making that a reality and our fixing the plumbing. So this is the incredible, incredible miracle of Avodas Hashem. And specifically, the Avoda of the Karbanos. And that's what the Chalban says in source number 6. He says, the service of the Korban fashions an integration of all the aspects of reality. So make sure, 1 second, I don't want to go too far here. Yeah. All the components of reality are unified together in a complete connection, integrated into one substance. Okay, the substance of the Korban. Okay, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself right now. So, but that's what's happening here. So let's explain exactly how this happens. How, by me making an offering of a Korban, do I put all the tubes and all the pipes all are in a perfect alignment? How does this happen? So let's explain as follows. And this is very well-known information. When a person brings a Korban, when a Korban is brought, what is happening down on planet Earth? Okay, we know the world is divided up in many different ways. On one level, they're divided up by elements, different levels of reality. And they are called in Hebrew, domeim, tzomeach, chai, and medaber. In English, domeim, inanimate objects, like rocks, minerals. Tzomeach, plants, things that grow. Chai, animals. Medaber, human beings. Okay. Now, without any human intervention, so everything just goes on its own. The minerals are minerals. The plants grow. Without any real purpose, the animals roam around, eat, whatever they do. People just talk, do what they do, try to make a living, make a parnasa. And you have four levels of existence that not necessarily interact with each other in any common cause that's of any benefit. The point of the Korban is down here, first, on planet Earth, we have to take all the different areas of existence and unify them together. And the way God set the system up is whatever we do down here, it affects what goes on up there. There's a direct linkage. If we unify the world down here, then the piping upstairs gets unified as well. How that works, ask the Almighty. He's the one who arranged it. But this is the realities. So let's look at what we're exactly uniting over here. So every Korban, let's look at what Korbanos have. Well, it's what must every Korban have? And if you don't have it with the Korban, besides the animal, what must it have? It must have salt. You got to have salt on a Korban. Okay? There is also, at various times, water.
Water
that's used, water libations as well. That is an inanimate object. Okay? So salt and water is symbolic of all the inanimate objects in the world. So tzomeach, plants. What plants did you have? Well,
The
ketoret. Okay, the ketoret. Yeah, that's part of it. But on yes, that's true. But also the wine libations. Most korbanos had a wine libation. Well, wine's made out of grapes. Grapes go out of the ground. Every mincha offering, every meal offering, out of flour and water.
So
flour. Flour is a grain.
Yeah.
It grows. Water. You have to have water to make a mincha. Water is an inanimate object. Okay, now I got animals. That's the chai. That's the living world. And then the medaber, the speaker, is the person who is the owner of the korban, the person, the Jew, who's bringing the korban. So we've got all the four levels of creation are now united in a common cause. We now take a sample of the inanimate world, the plant world, the animal world, the human world, put them all together for what? Unified to give this gift to Hashem. All right? Now, we're unifying the world down here. We're making it all have a common cause. But not just that, but even in terms of people. We have different types of people that are being unified. First, we have the Kohen. The Jews are divided up into three groups. The Kohen, he's the one that does the physical activity on the animal. The Levim, who create the ambiance, as it were. They do the singing in the Beis HaMikdash. They guard the gates. You have the Yisraelim, the common Jew is there. And for every Korban Tamid offering, the Jews would be there. They'd represent, there'd be a group of Jews representing the rest of the Jewish people. Bekitzer, what happened is that the work, and this, and here's the point. Now we can read the Chaban now. Now it's the time to read it. In 6. He says, the service of the Korban fashions an integration of all the aspects of reality. All the components of reality are united together in a complete connection, integrated into one substance. The substance of the Korban. That Korban, that's got everything. It's rolled up into that. Okay? And then what happens is, here's the miracle. The unification of all the components of the lower reality fashion a unity in the higher roots. That causes the plumbing upstairs to be unified. Now, here's the part that's way beyond what we could ever think. Now, you're wondering, okay, I want to know exactly what part does the salt unify up there? What part does the water unify up there? What part does the wine unify? What part does a bull unify versus a goat? What does the flour unify? What does the wine unify? What does the Kohen, the Levi, Yisrael? There must be paralleling certain things. I have no idea. But this is all in the deepest, deepest Kabbalah that exists. Who did know? The Kohen. The Kohanim, they were great Kabbalists. And when they're looking at every little mundane piece that exists here, they know that they all have a spiritual root above. And they would be concentrating on not only unifying what's here, but unifying everything that's above that needs to be put in the right place so that Hashem's blessings only go through complete realities. And when everything above is complete in every element till it comes down to planet Earth, then the blessing comes down into the world. And the Kohen knew all the Kabbalistic intricate understandings, and that's why we're very strict about Kohanim, that they have to be very focused. There is a prohibition called Machshavat Pigul, which in English, like a foreign thoughts in your mind that could be destructive to the Korban. Why? Because the Kohen's whole job, you think he's just a fine guy who knows how to run a butcher shop and knows how to make barbecues, right? The Kohen is knowing how every piece and every part of this puzzle is all connected to what's going on in the spiritual realms, and he has to have that in mind the entire time or the whole service isn't good. The Jew just stands there and relies on the Kohen. Now, this is really called, and this is called in Kabbalah, the Yichud, the unification of Kutchabricha v'Shchinte. It's the unifying Hashem and the Shekhinah. Hashem is way above. The Shekhinah is how he manifests down here in this world. And you unify it by first unifying each world itself. I'm going to unify planet Earth. And then that will cause unification in higher worlds. And when all the worlds are unified, the flow just comes straight down into the world. And that's what the Korban accomplishes. Okay? Now, this is important because that's what Hashem wants to have happen in this world. And that's what the Lutzado says in Source 7. He says the overall intention of the Kohen was to connect everything that is found, the lower entities and the higher above them, all of them to Hashem. We all get it focused. It's all coming from Hashem. And again, the Chabad elaborates this a little more in source number 8. So this was where the Beis HaMikdash was. In other words, here's the main point. We do a lot of things in our lives every day, but a lot of times we don't connect one thing to the other, one thing to the other. It's just a bunch. I do this, and then I do this, and then I do that, and then I do this, and I do this. And we're very fragmented people, and we lead fragmented lives. Person gets up in the morning, okay, so you get dressed. That's one fragment. Why getting dressed? Because I don't know why. You just get dressed. You eat breakfast. It's another fragment. You get in the car. You drive to shul. You daven. It's another fragment. Yeah, you get to work. It's another fragment. If you're married, you have a spouse, that's another fragment of life. You have kids, it's a different fragment. You have friends, it's another fragment. Different relationships, your relationships with workers, this, that, you make money. You know what? Is it going anywhere? Is it meaningful? So many of us lead fragmented lives. And the greatest point, proof of that is, that's when we do Averos. Because when you have fragments, so your boss tells you one thing, your rabbi tells you another thing, your wife tells you a third thing, and now what are you supposed to do? Well, you try to please the boss, you do a little bit for the boss, you do a little bit for the rabbi, you do a little bit for your wife. But really, you're running from one to the other. It's all fragmented. It doesn't really, nothing fits together over there. That's not a healthy life. Because you always feel, when you're doing one thing, that you should be in the other place. You're always feeling, well, what am I doing here? I should be there. What am I doing there? I should be here. And that's not a blessed state. That's not a blessed state. And, you know, Jew runs around the whole day. He's got a fragmented life. There's only one place in the world that was not fragmented. And where was that? Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim, from the word shalem. It's complete. And Yerushalayim was perfect. And only because why? Because of the Beit HaMikdash. In the Beit HaMikdash, everything was, you saw how all the pieces... all the pieces of it. It's all one thing. It's all from Hashem. It's all Hashem. It all connects to Hashem. It all brings us close to Hashem. And certain things happen in your life, and you say, this is happening in my life. This certainly is not keeping me close. This is taking me away from Hashem. I want to get away from this. But you got to remember, Hashem is the one who brought this into your life. So what do you mean to say it's not, doesn't fit into your avodas Hashem? So this fragmented life is a terrible way to live. So Hashem says, okay, so you're going to have to see the better way. And the better way is go to the Yerushalayim. Be with the Kohen. See the Avoda that goes out of there. Again, on a simple level, you know, if a Jew gets up in the morning, on a Saturday morning, he's got so many things on his mind. He gets up Saturday morning. You know, matter of fact, he thinks it's Friday morning sometimes. Right? It's Friday morning. First thing you do, you get up, you think it's Friday morning, you go to the bathroom, turn the light on. Then about 3 minutes later, you go, oh no, it was Shabbos. He says, how could I? And you're a person who keeps Shabbos. He says, how could I turn on the lights on Shabbos? I forgot it was Shabbos. How could you forget it was Shabbos? Because there's a lot of fragments in your life. And Shabbos is also a fragment of your life. And you know what's really more on your mind now? This business deal is on your mind. The source you have with your kids is on your mind. There's a lot of things on your mind. And they all look like separate things, and one is linked to the other, and they're all... So, you know, you are what your mind, you know, takes you up with. So then you can get up in the morning and you forget it's Shabbos. So what do you have to do? What do you have to do? If you lived in Haifa, okay, and you turned the lights on Shabbos by mistake, what would you have to do now?
Sacrifice.
You would have to take a trip right away to Jerusalem and buy a very expensive cow and bring it up as an offering. Now, why? Well, because you have to witness the defragmentation of your life, of how life can be. You know, I don't know if they still do it with computers now, with the older computers like 10 years ago, what you had to do is they called to defragment the computer. I don't exactly know what was happening, but like there was a lot of information all over the computer and they have to kind of put it everything in the right place so the computer works better. I don't know anything more than that, but they would come to defrag. So guess what? Computers need to be defragged, so do human beings. You don't know what to do first. You don't know. Say, do this or do that. I should go to the class. I should be at work. I should be this. Because there's different things, and they're not connecting. So you don't know what to do.
And you do carbon to
and more than that. Let's say even let's say you're doing a lot of spiritual things, but you don't see how one connects to the other. So that is all. So you don't feel no blessing comes into such a life. Because Hashem doesn't come to a fragmented world, because Hashem is perfect, and He has to come to a perfect world. And that's what the Chabad is saying in Source 8. The main activity of the Korban was in the connection of the different parts within our reality, within their connection to the higher realities. We find that the temple was a place where fundamental actions happened in the repair of the world, and that's what he calls it. The defragmentation of all the tears and separations within this world itself. This was so important that it resulted in influencing the higher lights above to bring revelations to the world below. That's what it's all about. The service in the temple was to defragment our lives. Plain and simple. You have money, that could also be a fragment of your life. It can be a very powerful fragment of your life that can really mess up your life. And Hashem says, I'm going to take some of that money of yours, you're going to buy, and that's going to go into the Korban, and that's going to bring the Korban, and now you're going to feel closer to Hashem, etc., etc. And that's what's happening. And we really have to have a more of a global look at everything in this world, how everything somehow can all be connected. Okay, so you're wondering, well, so how does this ever happen in my life? There's no Korban today. The Gemara says, well, no, there is. It says, your table in your house, your shulchan, is like a mizbeach. It's like an altar. So, in your home, at your table, you are the priest, and your job is to defragment. So, how are you going to defragment? Okay, so a lot of it has to do, and just like the coin had very holy thoughts, okay, we can't have the holy thoughts he has, but we can have some thoughts. Okay, so you have in front of yourself supper. And what do you have? A beautiful, hot, sizzling rib steak. Mamish. Right? Sounds good. Sounds good. A hot rib steak. Okay, now you could look at it like this. I'm really starving. I'm so hungry. And that rib steak looks so good. And what do? You just go into it and devour it. Okay. So you're still living a fragmented life. You finish eating it, you want another one. And you really like indulging yourself, and you become a big fresser. And now fressing becomes part of your fragmented life. Well, isn't that the way it's supposed to be? No, it's really supposed to be a little bit different, a lot different. Pause for a moment before you look at that steak. And you say, okay, what am I about to do? What am I about to do right now? So without thinking, you say, I'm going to have a good time. It's still part of the fragmented world. You could say, what I'm preparing myself right now to be the Kohen who's working in the temple. And to the best of my ability, I'm trying to defragment a very fragmented world. And let's see, what did it take for this steak to get onto my plate? What did it take? Well, what did it take? Well, this steak used to be a cow. Used to be a cow. There was a cow who was Moser Nefesh. He gave up his life for me. Right? He gave up his life for me. Right? Now, how did this cow come into the world? Well, he had a mother cow, gave birth to him. But how did the cow get so zaftik and so fat and so juicy, so tender? Well, this cow ate a lot of grass. So the grass, without the cow eating the grass, the cow wouldn't have be good tasty steak. Imagine a cow born with no grass. Right? Now the grass needed rain, wind, sunlight, minerals to exist. Right? Now, the fact that it rained and it needed a nice goyish farmer to plant, or a Jewish farmer in Israel, to plant and to work hard and to sow and to do all that, right? And till he grew the crops. So you have a whole farm industry that existed. But that farm industry, there's another industry raising the cattle industry. And then even the cattle itself, look, I don't know where the cow grew up, maybe somewhere in Iowa, place, maybe somewhere in the panhandle, I don't know. And then it gets shipped by train to a special place, and then the cow gets slaughtered, and then it gets cut up into pieces, and then a goy goes in a truck, and he ships the truck to Sobeys, and then from Sobeys they package it real nicely, and I'm able to buy it. It's a lot of fragments. You see all the fragments that are going on in this world? Now, wait a minute, you think you're getting that steak so fast? You go into the source, you could have a steak, and say, no. I say, why not? You got to pay for it. What's that? What is it? You have to have money. Where am I getting money from? Go to work. A new fragment now has come into the picture. I got to go to work. I got to make money. And then I got to use the money. I got to go to the bank. There's a lot going on. Okay, finally. Oh, wait a minute. And we're still not done. So it's a raw steak. You have to have an oven, bake the steak, a barbecue. Somebody had to make that barbecue. Some company had to make that barbecue somewhere, wherever factories make barbecues. There's a lot of different things going on over here, but it doesn't just seem to go anywhere. Well, it's all going to go somewhere very fast. You take the steak now, and now that you've thought about the steak for a little while, and you say, you know what? I don't really see any purpose to the farmer. I don't see any purpose to the cattleman. I don't see any purpose to the job I go to. I don't see any purpose to Sobeys. I don't see any purpose to the goyish truck driver who brought the steak here. As a matter of fact, what about the non-Jews who paved the highway that the goy could drive the truck on? Well, but now you come and you do the following. Now, if you're just going to take a steak and eat it, then finish. The whole world remains fragment. But all you're gonna say now, a few words. Blessed are you, God, King of the universe, that everything exists by your word. At that point, you know what you just did? You defragmented the entire universe into one whole. And you said, everything that I was just thinking about, all is unified for one reason. For me to acknowledge the Creator. That the Creator organized all these amazing things so that I would acknowledge God's presence and blessings in this world. Beyond what happens afterwards, I have the strength to serve Hashem and all of it, but not even up to that. That He took all the different parts of the world. It was one reason, so that a Jew should be able to acknowledge that Hashem has put it all in one, and to see how much Hashem loves us. And we're not Kohanim, and to know where everything down here relates to what's going on up there. The men of the Great Assembly took care of that. When they instituted the texts and the liturgies, they had all the right thoughts. They knew what the right thinking was. You just say it. And that's what happens every day. We don't have a temple, but you should be thinking about that too. And as much as we unify our own world, that will cause a unification of the worlds above. And when Hashem brings His blessings down, then you feel that closer. Yeah?
Say in Hebrew, but blessing.
Baruch atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Shehakol Nihyeh Bidvaro. Shehakol Nihyeh Bidvaro.
That's the bracha when we say when we eat.
Any bracha on any food. But you usually do it at your table. You know, in the secular world, you eat on the go. You're walking across a parking lot and eating your meal. Yiddishkeit, we don't sit at a table like a mensch. Because why? Because it needs the thought. When you're, you know, when you're going from one place to another, fast food, you're not thinking. You're anything where I'm running to work. Well, I got a meeting while you're slurping your coffee. Sit down at a table. You ain't going anywhere. And you just enjoy the calm. And use the calm to concentrate. That's why you have to wash your hands beforehand, just like a Kohen before he worked in the temple, he would wash his hands. All right. So
if it's a pastry, it's a lot, it's the same thing.
Any bracha will work the same way, right?
Yeah.
But we're just saying it's a way of defragmenting your world. However, this all brings great miracles in repairs to the world. And that's what's happening. All right? Now, the Zohar takes it a step further. The Zohar takes it a step further in source number 9. The Pasuk says, Adam ki yakriv. A man when he will... Now remember, now it doesn't mean when he brings himself close. It means you're bringing everything in the world close together. I'm bringing the mystical realms together. That's what it really means, korban. I'm bringing my world here together. That's korban. That's all my... And if you bring it all together, you're able to accomplish this. Says the Zohar, an incredible idea in source number 9. I'll read it from my Hebrew, and you have the gist of it. He says, come and look. When a person repairs his actions through a korban, the whole world gets intoxicated in a positive way and gets close and binds all the parts together into one wholesome unit. And that's what it means. Adam ki yakriv mikem. When a person will bring close together from you, what does it mean? He will bring together all of creation. Adam ki yakriv. When he will bring everything together, and guess who's excluded? A Kohen who is not married is not allowed to serve in the temple. You know why? Says the Zohar. I didn't say it. The Zohar says it. Because if a single man brings a korban, his korban is not a korban. And there'll be no blessings from what he does. Not above and not below. Because why? A person who's not married. Now we're talking initially. Like you don't plan on getting married. Eino bechlal adam is not included in a human being. You're not a human being. That's what Hashem said at the beginning. Let me create man, male and female, create them. Why? And the Shekhinah doesn't rest on them. Why? Because he's blemished. Because why? He's missing that wholesomeness. In other words, somebody with only female genes is lacking the male component to balance it out. One with only male genes is lacking the female component to balance it out. Okay, there are ways one can compensate for that. And we don't mean to say that, you know, your life is finished. No, but you have to realize it's a handicap. It is a handicap that has to be overcome. And there can be handicaps. You know, no, you're going to say, well, what do you want from me? I want to get married. I can't find a shidduch. Okay, that's God's business. That's God's business. You know, oh, why did Hashem give me such a terrible spouse? I had to get divorced from them. You know, that's God's business. But realize you're operating with a handicap. No, they can be overcome. You can overcome the things you do to compensate for it. But if you're the Kohen now, you're the leader. You're the representative. You're the one who's supposed to be the shaker and mover. And you want to make everything in the world complete. Well, you know, you're too handicapped to create these realities. You know, it's hard enough for you to be able to stabilize your own life and to defragment your own life, let it alone to defragment the rest of the world. And that's why, because there's lacking a basic wholeness within the person himself. And that's what the whole world is heading towards now. You know, okay, no, we live our lives and things happen and have trouble getting along and whatever. But now Americans, Western societies just don't get married. What do you want to get married for? Because my fragmented life is so amazing. Why would I want to go through the pain of defragmentation? And that's why that's how the point, everything has to be together. So now, I gave you one practical example of it, but now let's give you, the Chaban gives you a different practical example. And he says like this. He says, we see from all this that, you know, all this Judaism talks about getting close to Hashem. That's what it's all about, getting close to Hashem, getting close to Hashem. He says, a precondition to get close to Hashem is that we have to be unified within our own world. Within our own selves, we have to know there's two types of service that Hashem wants us to do. One is the easy one to find. That's the service of doing the mitzvahs and getting close to Hashem. To get up, to rise up to His level, to get closer to Hashem. That's one service. That's the more obvious one. Go to shul, daven, do that kind of stuff. The second one, which is less obvious, is the service of bringing, of simply defragmenting your life. People don't think that that's an avodas hakodesh, to defragment your life. But it is. It is. Because and how do we start defragmenting our life? There's many ways. But one of the obvious ways of knowing that's there or not, it's called, very simple, Jewish unity, one Jew with another Jew. If Jews can't get along with each other, is there not a greater defragmentation than that? Which is very evident in today's elections in Israel. There is no more fragmented country in the world than Israel, and miraculously it still survives. You know, you're going to have, I don't know, 12 parties, 14 parties getting seats. What's going to happen at the end of the election? They still won't know how to make it. They can't. The country cannot be, what do you call it, governed. You can't govern such a way. Right? So what's going to have to happen? What's going to have to happen? Whoever's going to come out on top, or wherever they're going to come out, who can now get a number of people together and make a coalition? You see that without a coalition, what's going to happen if they, I don't know, you know, Netanyahu, he gets his 20 seats, right? And he can't get another 41 seats. He can't. Okay, Labor, the new party, whatever, they got 23 seats, let's say. They can't make a shidduch. What are they going to do? There'll be no government. They still have no government. And that's why we're having an election. Because Netanyahu says, I can't govern with the people I have. I say one thing, they say the other. It's too fragmented. So you see, without one voice, you can't make decisions. It's very difficult. Okay, so you try somehow to put enough together to be able to do something over there. But as it applies to our own personal lives, but I'm just saying, you see this happening in the government. So in our own personal lives, we have to know that as much as we're trying to be good Jews, and I'm trying to get close to Hashem, he says the foundation of getting close to Hashem is getting close to each and every fragment that's in this world, and to feel that they are part of you as well. Okay? As the Medrash says, you know, a full Hashem is a full name, and he only comes upon a full world. So Hashem has this great light that he certainly wants to give, but Hashem is only going to give, you know, I give you an example. Somebody recently was telling me about their problems and this, and they want my help. I can't give a lot of details because, you know, I'm not allowed to do these things. But the kernel I can say without the... So the person has shown very unstable behavior. What I mean by, I don't mean crazy. I mean, the person will decide to do something a certain way this day and then the exact opposite the next day. And now the person's saying they need help. So I say, I'm very ready to help, but you have to decide what direction you want your life to go in, because on certain days I see you going like this, and other days I see you going like that. So now, I can't help you if you don't know where you're going. I can't say more, you know. But if you want to become, you want to go leave high school and go to yeshiva, then I can help you and find a good yeshiva for you. If you want to go to university and get a job, I can find you a good university and get a job. But if you keep every day, say, one day I want to go to yeshiva, one day I want to get a job, so help me. It's not going to help you. You don't know yourself what you want to do. A person who's very fragmented, they're just looking at today's fragment wants this, tomorrow's fragment wants this, help me. Yeah, but you don't have an overall goal in your life. No goal in life. You know, you have marriage issues with people. Yeah, that's a pretty broad topic, right? There's a lot of fragmentation in marriage. Bottom line, you want to be with this person the rest of your life or not? Let's get that goal. Do we have any goals here? Well, you don't know what your goal is. I can't help you. You want to make shalom bias. Oh, we want a shalom bias. Oh, you want a shalom bias. Well, do you know what the goals of that? What's the shalom of the bias supposed to produce? I don't know. I want to have it and she wants to have it. I can't get along with her. Yeah, because you're two fragmented people. We can't get along. So now I'm trying to help them, but I can't help them. I can't help them because they're both fragmented. Hashem gives all these blessings in the world. All these blessings in the world. And what do we do with the blessings? We're not ourselves able to take the blessing and move with it because we're so busy fighting with everybody else. We're not a whole person. A whole person is a person where there's no fragments at all in this idea. So let's say, for example, a person could, let's say, feel bad. You know, a person could say, so, you know, I'm not growing in my Yiddishkeit. And I don't feel I'm getting anything out of my davening. And a person, I'm feeling distance from God. It would be great if a person would even feel that way. But sometimes that could cause us grief, right? On the other hand, how often, when a person is not close to a friend, how often does he not realize how much terrible damage is there too? There's a person, I hate that person. Wait a minute. You don't think, I hate the person, I just want to know that person. And you think that's okay. That's not okay. Because, you know, Hashem's blessings in this world comes to the whole world, not just to you. Because you're just a fragment. His blessings come to the whole world. Right? And sometimes, for example, you say, I'm part of this organization. And you know what? I couldn't care less if another organization falls. Now, I'm not talking that organization is a wicked organization and is destroying the Jewish people. But, you know, let's say you're a certain brand of, you have a shul. And you like your shul, and it's my kind of people in the shul, and we get along, and it's our chevre, and we have a great time. Now you find out another shul that has a different approach to serving God, which is also a true approach. But it's a different approach. Your shul studies a lot of Torah. The other shul prays a lot, more than your shul. The other shul is collapsing. It needs help. And so it's not my problem. No, it is your problem. It is your problem. Because you know what? There's more than one way to serve God. And we need to keep as many available to serve God. And if it doesn't bother you that someone else is failing, and it's not your concern, then that's you're lacking a wholesomeness within yourself. And the truth is, it's better to have different flavors of Orthodox Judaism that are consistent with Avodas Hashem. You can have many different stripes of Hasidim. You go to Eretz Yisrael, there's dozens of different types of Hasidim. And that's a good thing, because every person will find his place within that world. And you know what? It's not like we're competing against them. But we should not feel that they're not part of our Yiddishkeit. And to say, well, they're not really Jews. They don't really, they're not part of it. That would be a terrible thing. So this becomes the critical component of what a korban is. And I think that bold line in 8 is the most important thing. It's the defragmentation of all the tears and separation within this world itself. That's what the korban was meant to do. The Yid who came in, he's coming in. If you're coming into the Beis HaMikdash, either because you've sinned, and any sin means is a fragmentation in your life. You need to put things back together. Or you could say, you know what, I'm dealing with a difficult world and I want to stay focused. So I've got to go overseas for the next 2 months, and it's going to be a big struggle because a lot of the messages are contrary to Torah messages, and I don't know if I can handle it all. I'm going to go to Beis HaMikdash to strengthen that, seeing how we could put every piece together and all work together. It's all one whole. And what is it? It's all one thing, to be able to be connected to Hashem. The end of the day, when you finalize everything about Judaism, it's what? That we should have the entire Jewish people should be connected and feel close to Hashem. That's basically what our Avodas Hashem is all about. Okay, there is more, but we really have gone already. It's already 10:30.
Yeah.
There's a whole other section, but we're not going to have time for that now. I think that's enough for us to... So therefore, when we're reading these parshios, that's the point I'm going to finalize. When you read these parshios, and you say, I have nothing with the animals, I have nothing with slaughtering and all these things, you got to realize the most important thing we have to realize is that we all have to deal with the fragmentations of our life. And we have different situations in life that afford us the ability to defrag. And that can be at your table when you eat. It could certainly be when you come to shul. You come to shul, a man who comes to shul has davening, and a minyan. You know, a minyan means we all are davening together. And I know you might like to go a little faster, you might like to go a little slower, and do this, but you know, we're going to all find a way for us to work together, to daven together. For different organizations to get along together. For husbands and wives who are very different, fragmented. These are all the parts, and the benefits are very simple. To the degree that we unify any aspect of life down here, we are unifying worlds above, and that brings the blessings down. And that's what Hashem is trying to bring down to this world, and that's what we're trying to... Hashem, as much as we want to get close to Hashem, how Hashem really wants us tiglosav, and to feel that from Hashem. We went to the Beis Hamikdash, you could even feel that. When you really make a bracha, and you think about everything we talk about before the bracha, you could sense how much Hashem wants our closeness. And then we will want to be close to Hashem as well. And this is certainly the lead up to Pesach. Because that's what Pesach, that's why Hashem took us out for this purpose. Okay, we'll stop over here.